Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of Post Game, SideQuest Patreon podcast all about hot takes on cold games. I am Melissa. I am the editor-in-chief at SideQuest. I use she, her pronouns. I'm here today to talk over the scene.
Sorry, we usually just go straight in talk about Hades. Sorry.
It's my fault. No, it was my fault. I was going to like try to segue, but I did a bad job.
Well, I'm Nassim, not always being interrupted or interrupting Melissa, what am I? Managing editor. They, them. Yes, I'm a they, them.
Hi, I'm Zora. I am SideQuest's assistant editor and copy ogre, and I also use they, them, and I did that intro flawlessly.
You did.
Applause. I would clap into the microphone, but I feel like that would be unpleasant.
Please.
Today, we are talking about hit game Hades, which you've probably heard of because it's everywhere. And it's still pretty new, all things considered. This is a hot take on a pretty warm game, I would say.
I think it's actually hot.
You think it's hot?
Yeah, I think Giant Bomb, it's ranked up there on Giant Bomb, and also some other stuff.
Okay, I'll take it.
It's hot. It's spicy.
It's spicy?
I think it won something, or has been winning a something.
Oh, it won at the Keeleys. I'm so sorry.
The what?
The Game Awards.
Oh, sure.
It won Best Indie, I think. Mm. No? Best Action Game.
It was on a lot of Game of the Year lists for people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's spicy. It's hot. Just like Zag's little feet.
That's a metaphor we should use more often. Zora, do you want to give the spoiler disclaimer?
Yes. Warning? So we're going to talk about Hades today, which means we're going to talk about Hades today. If you want to know exactly zero things about Hades, you should just turn off this podcast right now and then go play all of Hades and then listen to us talk about Hades. If you are thinking you want to play Hades, but you don't want the whole plot spoiled for you, you're in luck. We're going to try to avoid spoilers, like plot spoilers. We're going to talk about who the big, like the final boss is. We are going to talk about what characters appear and what characters don't appear. And then we're also going to talk about how those characters interact and what sort of tone some of their interactions have and what impression that left us with. So we're not going to get into specifics of interaction or big plot events. But if you want to go in totally fresh, we're gonna say some stuff. But we're going to avoid spoiling.
It's friendly if you're playing it and don't know everything, or we hope it is.
We won't. The big spoilers that we would probably touch on would be things that appear in Greek myth. As opposed to things that are directly related to the game.
Yes.
Which is a weird thing to say, but it makes sense in context.
This is what happens when you're talking about a game that's an adaptation of myth that's like several thousand years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which rules, which is also something we're going to talk about, is how that works.
Yes. Yes.
Yep.
So how far are each of us in the game? Because I think we're all kind of at different places.
Mm-hmm. I've rolled credits and I've finished a couple like NPC side quests or side plots or whatever. But when I say finished, I mean I haven't necessarily gotten all of their dialogue. I've just like cleared their quest in the book. And I haven't played in a couple months, so I'm not 100% sure or how far I've gotten.
I think I'm the farthest out of all of us, but not by much. Also have gotten through credits, have also gotten characters in the books and or their dialogues afterwards for, I think, most of them. And I have all of the gods either maxed out or locked. So I should be getting the epilogue soon. Today, maybe.
Nice.
Maybe.
I am through the credits, but not through the majority of character plot lines. And we can discuss the reasons for that later, one of which is just my severe lack of time. But
this is a fair reason.
But I have played all the way through the credits and have made it, I would say, probably halfway down the kind of relationship marker, the little hearts, for the majority of the main characters.
Cool.
So how about our myth knowledge? Like, where are we at as far as Greek myth familiarity?
Okay, I'm looking at our answers to this question in the doc, and I think it's a really good example of people assuming that they have less knowledge than others, because I think each of us says minor to moderate. And we all have very, like, extremely varied amounts of Greek myth knowledge. Like, it's amazing. So I said minor to moderate, which is that I read the Penguin classics, like the big ones, up and down when I was a child, and then I took a year of Latin in high school, and I've read Percy Jackson books as an adult. So I know I have a pretty broad but not very deep knowledge, except in a couple places that I don't come up in Hades. I know a lot about Hercules, but like only in half remembered scraps, and that's not going to come up here. So,
gotcha.
I mean, this is a good question. Like, I feel like I don't know a lot, but you know, Gabe, who I'm playing Hades with, doesn't know any. And I'm like, I guess I know more than I realize. But most of my knowledge, I read the Odyssey as an 8-year-old because I watched the Wishbone. So that definitely happened as a child. And then I taught a course, what was it? Ancient and Medieval Cultures? I don't know. Last year I was a TA in a course and we read a lot of the myths, actually. So I would say I have like a passing familiarity with at least what happens with a lot of them.
Okay. You
and then what?
Were a teacher in a course that had you reading the myths last year. So I need to take a look at how that differs from an 8-year-old reading several books. And how perhaps your knowledge might be more than minor.
But it sorry, now my dog is barking. But it did, I mean, like, it was also, it's not like we read a lot in depth. I mean, it was a 200 level course. So it was like, here, we're reading an excerpt from, you know, this. That is very specific. Yeah. So.
I'm just saying.
Fair.
My fun answer is that I have enough familiarity with Greek myth to be filled with glee that I get to repeatedly beat up Theseus while also wishing all the time that he was Agamemnon, but not so much that I will ever pronounce Patroclus correctly. I won't do it, and you can't make me.
You're not British. I mean, it's the same with the pronunciations of lots of the character. At least for me, I'm like, nah, that's British. I'm just gonna sit here in my American accent.
I learned Patroclus as Patroclus, and so Patroclus it remains. I did manage to mentally change Persephone to Persephone.
Yikes.
That's the result of reading as a child.
That's a fair, I mean, like, Antigone being called Antigone was my big thing when I was 14.
Yeah.
Oh, I read that when I was 14, huh?
Yeah. So we're going to pronounce things how we want to.
Yeah, exactly. My real, like, my actual answer with information in it is that I read a lot of Greek myth growing up. I was very, very into mythology, and I took a Greek and Roman literature course in college where we read the Odyssey, the Iliad, the Aeneid, some Sophocles, some Aeschylus, some Euripides. So I have a pretty good understanding of ancient Greek texts and ancient Roman texts, but absolutely no grasp whatsoever on real history. I know it through the terms of, like, through the lens of Homer and Aeschylus and Ovid, not so much through, like, actual historians.
Great. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be a bunch of every men every people talking about Greek myth, and it's and I guess what I'm interested in doing is considering Greek myths are all retellings. They're retellings of oral mm-hmm. stories. They were retellings mm-hmm. when they were transcribed. They're retellings in translation in the Penguin Classics. Mm-hmm. And they're retellings in every video game ever that's inspired by them. Right. Which is
right.
continues to be true for Hades. And so I'm interested in talking about Hades in contrast or in the same space as those other retellings, because it's not special just because it's a video game and just because mm-hmm. it's like queer and indie and what's the word, like extrapolative in a way that's mm-hmm. not the right word but it's not different just because it continues the stories of some of these characters rather than mm-hmm. just retelling the information
yes
as it exists in the myth,
right? Yeah, because a good portion of this is like it has that mythic foundation, but it is still a unique and inventive story beyond what we have of mythic text, which often disagrees with itself. So
yeah.
there's like 85 variations on every myth. It's just that certain ones get boosted to prominence.
Yep.
Especially by adaptation.
Do we want to really quickly say what the hell Hades is?
Sure.
Oh yeah, maybe you can tell me what a roguelite versus roguelike is, because I have seen both those terms used for this game. So there was a game called Rogue, I guess.
Yeah, I can do some. So Hades is I would call it a roguelite, and I will explain that in a moment. Developed by Supergiant, who you may know from games like Bastion, Transistor, and Pyre. They're an indie game developer, and they are known especially for having games with like here. Now here is where I shouldn't have volunteered, because I historically have not enjoyed Supergiant's games.
Do you want me to pick it up?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Please take over.
Okay. I really like Supergiant games, so I can give a slightly happier description of them. So Supergiant is known for games with really like vivid visuals and really entrancing music, and also
that are
fairly narrative oriented to varying degrees. Increasingly since Bastion, they've been really oriented around character and narrative. Bastion and Transistor have sort of action game elements. They're not hyper involved, but they are action games. And then Pyre is more of a sports game. In that there's some action-oriented gameplay, but only in the form of a weird basketball-esque match that you play in between visual novel-esque segments.
Interesting.
I really like what Supergiant does with visuals and music more mm-hmm. than anything, and I like their approach. I'm trying to think of how exactly to say this. I think I like their approach to narrative. I like their stories. I like how they tell them and how they reveal information in the stories. It really engages me. Their gameplay I find less enrapturing but enjoy. And their gameplay is the thing that I hear that people bounce off of the hardest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From my perspective, so I have played at least a demo of all of their games because I kept hearing how good the stories were. So I kept giving them a try, but I wasn't getting into them. And I think part of that was mechanic. Like just a disconnect between me and the mechanics, and also what I felt was a disconnect between the narrative and the mechanics.
Interesting.
Pyre really interested me for this reason, because the mechanics of the game within the game, from what I remember, are like kind of baked into the story as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
And Hades really interested me. Well, okay, to be fair, it didn't interest me at first. I was like, I'm not gonna like it. I'm not gonna like it. I've tried their other three games and I haven't liked any of them. What about this one is actually like, I know Greek myth and I'm a fucking nerd about Greek myth, so like, yes, there's that. Okay, the protagonist is cute, like, okay, sure, but I'm not gonna waste my time again because it hasn't worked thus far. So what actually happened was that a friend commissioned my other podcast, Fake Geek Girls, to do an episode on Hades because they knew that was the only way to get me to play it. And here we are. So I think what works about Hades for me in being a roguelike or a roguelite, a roguelike, very quick definition, is
can I just say what Hades is real quick in like a sentence?
Yes.
Okay, so Hades is a roguelike or roguelite, depending on Missy's definition to come, in which you play Zagreus, who is the child of Hades, the king of hell. the king of Hades, I guess, as he tries to escape from the underworld. The game is, it's a roguelike, so it loops. You play through, you get boons, you have little dialogues with characters, you get killed, you go home, and then the story is introduced to you through dialogue that you have with most of the hub characters at the end of each loop. And then you do it again, and again, and again, and again.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I'm on... Oh, I think I've gotten over 100 run-throughs at this point, between me and Gabe, to be clear.
Yeah, so that's what Hades is. Okay, sorry, now you can, now that it's fully contextualized.
Okay, so a roguelike is a game genre that comes from a game called Rogue back in the 80s, which was one of the earliest games to introduce permadeath as a mechanic alongside procedural generation. Mm. So every run you did was unique, and every death meant you started over. Mm. So I think you could argue that Hades is a roguelike, meaning it adheres more strictly to those rules, but I place it more in the definition of roguelite. The reason being that the framing of the mechanics is more like, it's not about getting as far as possible. It's about learning through failure and developing the story through failure, which I think is a difference in terms of like how the mechanics are used. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm going to mull on that some more.
And the fact that it is a roguelite is actually part of why I enjoy this game and I don't enjoy Supergiant's other games, because I think there is an inherent connection between the mechanic purpose of being a roguelite and the story.
Yeah.
Whereas the action elements of their other games did not grab me in the same way.
Yeah, I liked Transistor. I thought that meshed fairly well, but I'm in a minority of Supergiant, even Supergiant fans with Transistor.
They definitely have, like, they have great aesthetics. They have really cool ideas. And I always, like, I want to like their games. Mm-hmm. But when I sit down to play them, I'm just like, it's not doing it for me.
Mm. That's actually what happened to me with Pyre, is I really struggle with visual novels more than anything. And I did not enjoy the sports part of it. So I fell off Pyre, and I'm just waiting until it comes to Switch, because then I will be okay and I will love it, but I'm waiting because I hate to play a video game on my computer, and I'm not going to play a visual novel on my PS4.
That's fair.
Fair.
So our first kind of discussion question, because this is, it's unusual for us to only talk about one game.
It really is.
Is how does Hades as a game kind of rehabilitate, rejuvenate, reimagine Greek mythological characters for a modern audience? Because this isn't a game made for ancient Greeks. Like, not only would they be like super fucking confused, but like the game is clearly made with a modern audience in mind. Like, I feel like at one point they don't say phone, but there's like a reference to calling somebody.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember what it was, but it was like this brief anachronistic moment where I was like, right, this is not, it reminds me actually a little bit of Lore Olympus, which is
it reminds me a lot of Lore Olympus, actually.
Yeah, it's a super popular webtoon. And the reason that I bring it up is obviously there's the parallel of they're both being adaptations of Greek myth, but in the world of Lore Olympus, it's still like ancient Greece on Earth, but the gods are living essentially in modern times. They have all the fancy accoutrement of modern living, whereas the Greek people are living in ancient Greece.
Honestly, rules.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
It is great. I have a lot to catch up on that one, though.
Oh, I'm so behind. So just to revisit the question, how does Hades kind of take these elements of Greek myth that are familiar to a lot of people worldwide and reinvent them for a modern audience?
Did you want to do this based on the sub questions, or just, are we just going to go at it?
Oh, I don't know how to read. So our first, so like the first part of that question is who do we think the audience is? And I did kind of say it's not for ancient Greeks. I think we can agree on that. But it's also like, it has such a wide appeal that it's worth figuring out who's it for? Who's this game for?
Yeah. So full disclosure, I wrote these questions.
Yes.
It's me.
Which is why I'm awkwardly delivering them.
And I ask this because of Hades' widespread, like, not just appeal, but success, right? Like, we talked about how it's on a ton of Game of the Year lists. It's really high up there. I don't know if Giant Bomb does one huge Game of the Year list, because they posted it today and I read a tweet and I got confused and I didn't click on the link because I was going to the vet. But it was high up for Polygon. It was high. It's high up in a lot of Giant Bomb stuff. It won Best Action Game at the Game Awards, right? Like, these are all very mainstream platforms that typically put AAA games in those positions. But it's also been really successful at less mainstream, less mainstream communities like us at SideQuest. Like, a lot of SideQuest contributors are playing and enjoying Hades. A lot of my queer disillusioned friends are really enjoying Hades because it has these like queer and kind, not necessarily wholesome, but like there is this like respect for personhood, I guess.
That's a good way to put it, actually.
In Hades that you don't always see in AAA darlings, even the ones that are applauded critically for being like more quote-unquote cinematic, more like high art. And so I was really curious about who Supergiant was conceptualizing when they built the game.
I have an answer. I have a flippant answer.
Great.
And a serious answer.
Fantastic.
The flippant answer is, you know how once a week, not even, once a day, you see a post going around that's like, if you read Greek mythology in middle school, you're gay now?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the audience. But this is the caveat to that. I'm going to ruin my own joke. Because the reason that I say this is because those posts are so widely applicable that they apply to most people.
Yeah.
But they feel like they apply to you specifically.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
So wow. if you read Greek and mythology in middle school, you're gay now. Well, we're probably once a middle schooler, and I think that's the more important point. But it feels like it's targeted at you. And that's how I feel about Hades, because I did read Greek mythology in middle school and I'm bisexual. So it feels true that the game is for me. I also love disaster characters. Mm-hmm. I love a snarky character, and I love Greek myth. So I feel like the game is made for me. But I am part of many larger demographics, and I feel like the game has this widespread appeal for a lot of reasons, in the same way that those tweets do. And part of the widespread appeal for me, I think, comes from the fact that Greek myth is constantly being reinvented and reinterpreted. I mean, we talked about Lore Olympus. There's the Song of Achilles and Circe, mm-hmm. by Madeline Miller,
mm-hmm.
Percy Jackson, mm-hmm. Everything. Like, it's everywhere. It's pretty ubiquitous within our culture for a variety of reasons that we don't need to get into. Even if you're not super into Greek mythology, like, you're not like, oh boy, I have a favorite god and etc., you probably have enough familiarity with the concept of the Greek gods to understand like what's going on in the game without needing to look it up.
It's subject matter that's both like incredibly familiar and incredibly deep. So basically everybody in the US, at least, I don't know what other school systems are like, but basically everybody in the US has a passing familiarity with the main Greek pantheon, the main Greek mythology, the Homeric epics, the main Homeric epics. And so, like, can recognize those names. Like, basically everyone's going to log in and be like, oh, Achilles, I know who that is. But not
or I recognize that name.
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But not everybody knows the details of Achilles' story.
Like, he was an asshole.
He was a big old dick. God. But so was everybody else, right?
Yes.
Here's my thing about Greek mythology.
Everyone.
To engage with it, I have to just accept that that everybody is related to everybody else, and everybody is also fucking everybody else.
Yes. Not always consensually. Mm-hmm.
And also that everybody's kind of a douchebag.
Yeah.
Like, you just gotta incorporate that into your heart and into your mind and move on. Because we can't cancel the Greek myths because they're Greek myths.
I'm out here canceling Agamemnon.
That's also fair. Still has a fun name.
He does. Yeah, so there's this widespread familiarity that it functions as a plot hook without any, and like, I think there's a sense of nostalgia about it too, because I think a lot of us probably were introduced to Greek myth in childhood, whether through something like Percy Jackson or through just like that big yellow book of myths that my husband and I both read despite growing up in two different states and it not being a required thing for school. Like, we both read it. Exact same book. It's super weird. But I think that there's more to it too. And this is actually pointed out at Deep Hell in Skeleton's review of Hades, that the game has this very clear and I would say intentional sexiness about it that some would call horniness. that lends it this even greater air of broad appeal. And I think that comes through in like fan art. Like, yeah. The amount of fan art of this game is incredible.
There is a lot.
And I see, if I put my cynical hat on for a moment, the artistic direction within the game and the intentional sexiness, some would say horniness about it, I think makes it almost like catnip to fan artists. And that helps promote the game further.
I do want to mention that SideQuest, in fact, did put it as horniness. I think I called it classily horny.
Good.
So those are the words on our website.
Okay. I couldn't remember. Some, you might even say us, would say horny. So I think that it has that too, because you see not only do you see the in-game art, which is itself classily horny, but you also see the fan art interpretations by insert your favorite fan artist here, right? Like, everybody's putting out fan art for this game. And it ends up with this sense of like cultural pervasiveness that is not as intense as like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but like, if your favorite fan artist is drawing art of Hades and you're like, hey, that looks fun, especially because like it does look fun. The interactions between the characters and that kind of stuff. Like, I was, before I actually played the game, I was like, it does look fun. Everybody's luring me in with these character interactions. I don't know who that is, but like, they look cool. So like there's this widespread appeal, and like everybody can have a favorite character, right? Because you have your hot, troubled protagonist with a heart of gold. You have your tragic gaze. You have a mean girl with a whip.
That's great.
You have a wholesome muse and artist relationship where the artist is a dipshit and the muse has all her shit together.
Yes.
And they're all drawn within the game itself and also by fan artists in this fashion that is sexy without being like video game sexy.
Yeah, that's also part of it, is it's sexy. Like, if I contrast the interpretations of Greek characters or mythological characters in Hades with the interpretations of mythological characters in, say, Marvel, I don't even mean the movies, I mean the comics. There's some differences. Athena, or not Athena, oh my god. Sorry, what I'm about to say is going to matter. Aphrodite in Hades, not Athena. Aphrodite is fully nude in Hades. Yeah. But she's not like tits out in the camera. Like,
it's very classy.
She's not like ready to be an aggressor with her sexuality in the way that modern comic book characters are almost always drawn, like sexy characters in modern big two comics. And I don't, this isn't all of them, but it's many of them, are presented in such a way that their nudity, however nude they may be, is focal when they're framed. Mm. Whereas with Athena, her nudity is just a fact about her
Aphrodite.
Oh my god, did I say Athena again? What is wrong with me? with Aphrodite. No, with Aphrodite, her nude, like, she is nude, and that is true. And she is a sexual character, but it doesn't forcibly remind me how the vast majority of men would like to perceive my body. And that matters.
Yeah. I think there's almost something a little, speaking just specifically of Aphrodite, there's something a little almost uncanny about Aphrodite as well that reminds me a bit of the Great Fairy in whatever Zelda game it is.
All of them?
All of
them. Is it all of them where she's like, has a wild laugh?
They're pretty uncanny and have a wild laugh in most of the Zelda games.
Yeah, like they both have the big titty deal. Mm-hmm. But there's something about them that makes them like, this is not for you.
Yeah.
There's something uncanny about them that makes like, where it's like, yes, this is sexy, but it's not cheesecake. And I think that is something else that like has that widespread appeal. And like the character designs themselves are just unique. Like, it's not like everybody is just wearing a boring toga.
Yeah. There's, not extensive body diversity in Hades. No. And that in itself is a problem. All of these characters are built. They are muscly.
Very.
And that's, you know, problems with that. There's also, however, there is a certain amount of kind of novelty in seeing muscle-bound characters in a variety of shapes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's a limitation in the character designs, but there's also, you know, Sisyphus and Ares are different shapes. Zeus and Zagreus are different shapes. That doesn't mean, and Athena and Aphrodite are different shapes. I said both names on purpose this time. And that is appealing, I think, to me as a player, and also to fan artists, because there is variety where frequently you get many different shapes of men and one woman, possibly two women, skinny and fat, and nothing in between. Whereas in Hades, pretty much everybody, not a whole lot of people have a high, a lot of fat on their bodies, because they're chiseled. But
yes,
yeah,
they are different. They're like varieties of chiseled, and our bar is so low that's exciting.
Yeah. Just seeing different body shapes is more than I expect of most games with a variety of, characters. Like, I'm thinking like of like a fighting game roster, right?
Yep.
Or even something like Dragon Age, right? Like, it's like beef dude, strong girl, wispy girl.
Yeah.
And I think the games, the way that it uses the character like designs is part of the appeal, just because like you can look at any of them and develop a favorite just on sight. And the fact that the characters are designed in this fashion that is like sexy, like intentionally sexy, and sexy in a variety of ways, but not not a all-inclusive way, but a variety of methods of sexiness. Like Dionysus is not the same kind of sexy as Meg is not the same kind of sexy Achilles is not the same kind of sexy as Aphrodite, but they're all pretty sexy, and that makes it really ripe for fan art in this way that is like, what's the way I can phrase this, it's like teasingly sexy.
There's a lot of like inviting you to imagine in Hades, because they're very efficient with their assets, and so I don't know, people can imagine characters doing different things.
Mm-hmm.
varying levels of horniness.
Yeah. And even like the open-endedness of the game itself can also be, I mean, I haven't finished it, so, you know, but the open-ended nature of myth, I think, is something that lends itself to ongoing creation, whether that's ongoing creation in the sense of like reinterpreting the myth as Hades does, or fan creation, right? Because it's kind of wild that you have this reimagining of Greek myth that can then churn out its own fan fiction.
This is actually really important because Hades itself is not just a reimagining, but is also generative. It is fan fiction.
You're wading into the discourse, Zora.
I know. I was gonna rephrase anyway. Some people would interpret Hades as fan fiction. The same people who interpret Dante's Inferno as fan fiction. Which is to say,
or the Aeneid.
Or the Aeneid. But I think that that's important, right? Because Hades is looking at these myths and saying, what if we continued to tell the story? And so we can talk about what defines fan... Well, no, we cannot talk about what defines fan fiction. But people can you know, there's discussion, and I think it's important discussion about what fan fiction is, and how it differs from like mainstream published work, and what the writing process is. This just happened on Twitter. Do not at me. But it's important to like contextualize Hades within interpretive work, because that's what it's doing. It's interpreting and continuing stories that have already been told.
I think if nothing else, it is absolutely fair to call Hades transformative work.
Transformative is the word that I couldn't remember. Thank you.
Well, I mean, I think what you said is not wrong. But I think to say that Hades is, we can argue all day about whether it's fan fiction or not, and we're not going to do that. But it would be impossible for me to say that it's not transformative, because it is transformative.
Yes. And that's what I was trying to get to, is it certainly is transformative. And I think that's very, very appealing to a, to fanfic or to fan artists, but also to a wide variety of people, because, you know, we know the basic Achilles story. Most people have heard the name Achilles, know that he died because he got shot in the foot in a war. and that's where the story ends for him. But Hades the game continues that story beyond what most people know and beyond what's strictly established in myth.
He does get a cameo in the Odyssey. He says that he regrets not having a legacy, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, he tells Odysseus, when Odysseus goes to the land of the dead, that he regrets not having like progeny and a legacy afterwards.
And from what I've seen from like classics people online, I don't have a primary source for this, so I'm like quoting a tweet from a classics guy I follow that I dimly remember. He was fairly impressed with you know, what's in there. It seems like the narrative designers read a lot. And so it's transformative in such a way that like it incorporates a lot of myth about the characters who appear in the game.
Yeah. Like as we discussed, like I have decent familiarity with Greek myth. Like I would say more than the average person, but not as much as a person who studies it for a living.
Well, that's quite a range, Missy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the guy I'm thinking of is Hamish Cameron, designer of The Sprawl, which is a very good tabletop RPG. And he's a classics professor. Like, that's his job in real life.
I love it.
Well, he's also a designer in real life, but that's his job that pays him a salary to live.
Like, I have a pretty good familiarity with the Greek pantheon, but I did not know about Zagreus. I didn't know that Zagreus is a real mythological figure. I mean, he gets a whole page and a half in Robert Graves's Greek myth, but which is nothing comparatively. So he wasn't a super, 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 super prominent figure, but I had no idea that figure existed. Which is another thing that appeals to me about this game, is the fact that like the the little tidbits that interest me can take me deeper into something I already enjoy.
I think, yeah, I mean, that's one thing that really interests me about this game as somebody who has probably more than average knowledge of these myths is like what they've decided to honor, quote unquote honor, based in like popular knowledge or reading the myths themselves versus what they decided to not include or to take a new look at. The obvious one being that Zeus in mythology popularly rapes everybody and has a gazillion children. And he does mention that he has a gazillion children in the game, but they don't talk about the rape, which, you know, like they had to, there's no way to not include Zeus, right? Like you have to do that. But, and so on one hand, it's like, I don't think it's excusing those things. Like, I don't think not including those elements means that the designers are like, yeah, no, we're not going to ignore the fact that this is a problematic character. But I think what it does is that it shifts the perspective and like what we care about in these stories. Like another thing that I think about is Sisyphus. And I don't know his, like, I know his myth kind of broadly. I don't know the specifics, but he's very wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like without kind of giving too much details of like the backstory that we get, he feels like a character who has grown from what we might understand as his interpretation of myth. And I think that's really interesting. This idea that like these are characters that have been with us for thousands of years. In the world of the game, they have been around for thousands of years in theory, but that doesn't mean that they're stagnant necessarily. Mm-hmm. He has some complaints on this part, but I find that really, really interesting about this game too.
Yeah, and I think that that level of continuing the story and deepening it and allowing the familiar mythic figures to grow is another thing that's really appealing. The recontextualizing of these classic stories, I think, is really valuable to modern audiences because, like, the best example I can think of this is Achilles and Patroclus.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we look back at Greek literature, so if we look at the Iliad, for example, you can see what looks to be a queer relationship, or at least the potential for queer relationship mm-hmm. between Achilles and Patroclus. It's never explicitly stated. And part of that comes from centuries in translation mm-hmm. within a heteronormative world. And some of that comes from the construction of norms in Greek society, which when we look through a modern lens, we might look at Achilles and Patroclus and we say gay, right? We might do that. But that is without some of the nuance of life in Greek society, which the relationship between Achilles and Patroclus could have been one of pederasty. I don't know if I said that right, but essentially this was a relationship that was normal in this time period where you would have a sexual relationship between a young man and his
mentor.
Yeah. There's a really good article about this and a lot of the discrepancies between myth and or between Hades and myth and Greek society at Wired, which we can link to in the show notes. But I like the thing is, I'm not looking for historical accuracy from this game. That's not what I want. When we look back at Achilles and Patroclus and we point at it and we say gay, we are at once being ahistorical. And I think it's worth noting that we're being ahistorical, but we're also looking for a queer lineage that has been denied to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that level of reinterpretation of being like, no, it wasn't this norm at the time that from a modern perspective is like super fucked up. It's instead this relationship of mutual respect and love, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that level of reinterpretation is very valuable, and I don't see the need for it to be historical, because I'm not going to mm-hmm. Hades the game to learn about Greek society. Right. If I wanted to do that, I could go read a Greek
work. It's also worth noting that these are all myths that have been retold time and time again,
right.
Not just in the modern era, but also historically.
Mm-hmm.
They've been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, So every time they're retold, they're recast with that time's kind of morality.
Mm-hmm. I think the Iliad being our like primary source text for the story of the Trojan War was written hundreds of years, I think, after the Trojan War, if I remember correctly.
And so you know, this is all, the recasting is all in the tradition of retelling. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make it a bad retelling because it doesn't match the source text that we frequently refer to. We're not using it as an educational, like as an educational vehicle. It's part of living myth.
Right. Yeah. And that comes through in similar, like the Song of Achilles is the one that comes most to mind by Madeline Miller, which is a similar narrative, like reinterpretation of Achilles and Patroclus's relationship. That's grounded in a background, from what I understand, grounded in a background of classics knowledge, but interpreted through a modern lens. And that's valuable too, because not only do games like Hades, do works like the Song of Achilles, like allow us to reinterpret foundational stories, but they also give us insight into the past, which is itself subject to interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think at this point I want to move into more specifically the drawbacks that there are to this sort of rejuvenative approach to retelling, not because one of which is I worry that people will gain ahistorical like ideas about what actually happened and what ancient stories actually were, and I don't I say I worry like I'm like the fucking ancient myth police.
You're out here fretting over it.
Me constantly worried about teenagers on the internet. I mean, I am, but not because I think that they're going to start discourse. It's just because I'm worried about kids, like generally.
Fair.
Kids have it hard. No, but the thing that it's queerness in history this is most interesting to me with regards to queerness, and also with regards to like morality in general. Greek myths typically are hard stories. They don't, not a lot of them have happy endings. Hercules ends by essentially dissolving because he puts on acid clothes that a jilted ex gave him. And when I say jilted, I don't mean wrongly. I think she was well within her rights. I do not remember her name, but I remember even as an 8-year-old being like, this seems okay.
My readings of most ancient Greek works of literature is basically that like team whoever the wife who did the bad thing was.
For sure.
Yeah, I'm same
time. But my point is like they're rough stories. They're not happy. They end in a lot of death and despair. And have strong, well, at least the retellings that I know have strong moral casts to them. And I think that that's important, that was like the storytelling tradition. And I think it's important that we not be like the past was unproblematic.
Yeah.
But I also think that there's value in retelling stories in a way that doesn't make me like really exhausted and want to just take a nap.
Do you think that this would have been, or is it, I don't know. How do I phrase this in a way that doesn't like make someone do a capital D Discord, not us? Is it worth doing like a disclaimer or like a post game? No. Like this is the thing. Like, is it, not the responsibility of like the devs to make like, hey, you should think critically about these stories.
I mean, this is my opinion. But no, I think it's important that people be able to just retell stories like we have been forever. But I think it's also important that we as consumers of those stories, consume them as discrete units. I don't think that reading Percy Jackson means that I've read the Greek myths. It just means I have familiarity with the broad casts of some of the stories and some of the characters. And I think that's important for other players of Hades. But I think that if the devs of Hades had to put a disclaimer on their game that was like, not all of this is from the texts, I would scream and run into the night. Because people really, truly, please consume media critically.
I think, yeah, I think that as critics, to take a very slightly different tack, like, I think as critics, it is worth it to draw attention at times to what the discrepancies are.
Yeah, of course.
Less because I think it's fun to poke holes in things, because I don't. And more because I can't expect everybody on Earth to have a grasp of what relationships between men were like in ancient Greece.
Yeah.
Especially because popular discourse suggests that Achilles and Patroclus were just gay, end of story. Now that might be true, right? That might I don't fucking know. I'm not ancient Greek. For all I know, they really were just super in love with each other, and there was nothing shady about the dynamics of their relationship whatsoever. But it is a good opening to discuss things like, hey, that's not, like, it's more complicated than that in ancient Greece, right? Yeah. It's not just that, because a lot of times people will say something like, oh, well, you know, in ancient Greece, it was okay to be gay. And it's like, it wasn't actually.
Yeah.
It was acceptable for men to be together in certain circumstances, but not all of them. And also, like, women weren't allowed to do anything at all.
Yeah.
So, like, we can't just say it's good.
Yeah. But and then also at the same time, though, there is that queer lineage. Like,
exactly.
Just because it wasn't acceptable for people to express queerness in the same way that we express queerness and the associated identities and behaviors today, doesn't mean that people that shared, like, identity experience didn't exist.
And I think that's something that is really wonderful about the amount of Greek literature that survives, because we do have like Sappho fragments, right, that do give us that lineage of queerness that we may not get as clearly from other source texts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying all this, but I edit an anthology of queer historical fiction, right? And that every single part of that title is important. Like, it's queer, it's historical, and it's fiction. And our guiding factors in it with Dates is the anthology. Is that we don't want tragic endings, which means in some cases being ahistorical. Because our interest is not in telling history, but allowing people to access and, like, internalize that lineage of identities that we would now interpret as queer. Even if, you know, like, you don't necessarily have lesbians being like, no, actually, I'm gonna reference a different story. Maybe there aren't a lot of stories about trans women doing train heists. Maybe that didn't happen, but it's fun to see it.
Absolutely.
And it's similarly fun to see Achilles being, like, a gay or queer character with having a relationship that doesn't make my brain scream in a modern game.
Especially because that, like, there is tragedy in the relationship between Achilles and Patroclus in Hades itself. But the tragedy is not a result of their queerness.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that level of interpretation too is important. The idea that, like, it's not sad because they're gay, it's sad because it's fucking sad.
Yeah.
And that also is part of the that should be part of the fabric, I think, of queer stories that we tell too, is it's not tragedy because they're gay, tragedy because sometimes the world is tragic.
Yep.
But in terms of, like, so we've kind of covered, like, some of the responses that people might have to the game as far as, like, it's ahistorical or this or that, which I think we have largely agreed it doesn't really matter if it's ahistorical. But I think that one of the criticisms of the game is with regard to the depiction of bodies within it. And we touched on this briefly, but the bodies within the game are sexy. We can that's pretty universal. There's a lot of sexy people in that game. Whether or not they're your personal cup of tea, like, I think they are drawn in a sexy fashion. But the level of sexiness within the game is concentrated primarily on normative bodies. Mm-hmm. Like Zora used the word chiseled to describe the majority. They're extremely chiseled, which is, you know, they have the Greek statue vibe going on.
Mm-hmm. Funny.
But the result is that you have very modern ideals of sexuality that aren't challenging. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of a bummer, especially combined with like the exclusion of some of the gods. The big one for me is Hephaestus, who within, you know, Greek canon is a disabled god of not just blacksmith, like none of them are gods of just one thing, but he is the one who builds the cool stuff, basically.
He's widely known as the smith god.
I was surprised, like, why wasn't, they have Daedalus. Like, I'm still like, but why did you choose, like, a lesser known smith?
So my guess in terms of, like, gameplay is I would have, if I had seen, like, Hephaestus's anvil in the game, I would have been like, where the hell is Hephaestus? Whereas if it's Daedalus? Yeah. Where if it's Daedalus, I'm just like, okay, it's Daedalus, is whatever. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't draw attention to the non-inclusion of Hephaestus.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to justify not including, or I'm not trying to explain the choice to not include Hephaestus, but I do understand why you would choose Daedalus instead.
Yeah.
As a name attached to an object as opposed to a character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because Daedalus isn't a character. He's just, he left his tools lying around.
Yeah, I thought that was odd in particular, because I missed the first time that it happened that it was Daedalus.
Mm-hmm.
And I assumed it was Hephaestus just based on like what was happening when I chose, like when I would pick something up from that. And then later I realized it was Daedalus and I was like, okay. I'm not opposed, but like, but why not Hephaestus?
Yeah.
And when you consider that in context with the rest of the characters, like, now, first of all, Hephaestus was not treated nicely by the other Greek gods. So like, I mean, but who was really? They were all shitheads. I'm gonna get fucking struck by lightning as we talk.
It's worth it. Zeus can suck it.
If I end up in Hades, I hope that the book that Hypnos has says struck down by Zeus for saying the Greek gods were shitheads.
But Hades also says the Greek gods are shitheads. Like, the game Hades repeatedly is like, all these guys fucking suck.
Yeah.
It's true.
That's true.
But yeah, I think the exclusion of Hephaestus itself is not necessarily the problem. But Hephaestus within Greek myth has a non-normative body. And when you consider that in context with the very widespread sexy acceptable sexiness of the other characters, it becomes a question of like, why are there no fat bodies in this game? Yeah, why are there no disabled bodies?
There are fat bodies in this game, and they are enemies that you kill in the hundreds.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right.
And that ain't great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still have, I'm still mulling over the race thing, which one of my friends is like, well, you know, maybe they get around with that because some of them have like ambiguously colored skin, like Meg or Hades. And I'm like, yeah, that almost makes it worse. Then we have like two solid color characters coded as characters of color. And then the rest are like, yeah. And Greeks, I mean, it's not like the ancient Greeks were white. Whiteness wasn't a thing then. Mm-hmm. And with like how ubiquitous Greek culture eventually spread, like it's not the same. I don't know. I'm still thinking over thoughts on this
There's a piece at Kotaku that talks about Athena being black, and the piece at Wired also touches on, I think it responds to that piece as well as like talking about, and I didn't read the piece that it references, but it references another piece about Athena being black, and what
she seemed coded as black with to me too. So,
And similarly with Eurydice.
Yeah.
So there's like the way that the Kotaku piece, I believe, talks about it is with regard to like, as you mentioned, Nassim, the fact that Greek culture was kind of everywhere and they viewed the gods as somewhat ubiquitous. So therefore, it would stand to reason that different interpretations of the gods might look different, which I think the Wired piece pushes back on a little bit. But like it's difficult, like, what is accuracy?
Yeah.
In this context, like it's hard to say like what accuracy is and therefore what like what it means to change or not change.
Also I don't have a lot of conclusions to draw on this because I haven't spent the time thinking about it, which in itself is representative of a certain amount of privilege. But I think also, you know, there's representation within the game in terms of coding of characters, but there's also representation in the making of the game, which brings up, you know, how many devs on the game were black, how many voice actors were black. I know that Eurydice's voice actor is black, and also the guy who voice acts for every single Supergiant game is a black guy, which doesn't necessarily give them like representation points. But the for me, a consideration is not just are there characters of color or characters who are coded as being people of color, black, indigenous, or otherwise in the game, but also how many of these marginalized groups were included in its making.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wasn't, you're right, like I wasn't thinking about the like the dev team. I was thinking about like, you know, when we're talking about these characters being sexy, well, how many of them are coded white versus how many of them not? But that's a really good point too. And it's an interesting, like, you know, for however, it's not like, I don't know, it's tricky, right? Like how do you talk about representation in a meaningful way when you're thinking through these layers of both like the physical representation of what we see on the screen, but then also who are the people behind it?
Yeah, I don't have any questions about race. I do think that the Hades particularly drops the ball on fat rep, specifically in two ways, in both like, I guess, positive and negative ways, which I mean both in terms of inclusion, they don't have a lot of positive inclusion and they do have negative inclusion. or negative representation, which is guys. Whereas with race, at least it's not Uncharted.
That's the laugh of an Uncharted fan.
Oh god. And I don't mean that like that's an acceptable bar, but what Hades definitively does not do is represent people of color or characters coded as people of color as exclusively antagonists. Or
Hades does not do that. You were absolutely right.
Whereas they do that with fat bodies and representation of fat bodies.
Right.
Which is not so good. I haven't like played Hades. I haven't played with a like a disability focused lens, so I can't comment on the inclusion exclusion or like the negative inclusion part, but there's certainly not a lot of positive.
I mean, the closest, I'm wondering whether like the conversations around Dusa and Dusa's body, they're not the same, to be totally clear.
That's a completely different, like, she is a mythological monster.
Right. Yeah. It's not the same. It's, I mean, you know, by the same token, gods, like, it's absolutely not the same. I'm wondering if that's part of what I have no clue. I wonder if they were trying to have that conversation with that, if they did poorly.
It's really hard for me to like put words in Dev's mouth, but I read her story as frequently trying to be, maybe not, I don't want to use the word trying. Her story has a lot of elements of an attempted allegory.
Yeah.
And I can see the allegorical elements, but I don't know that it's particularly successful. But I also, when I was playing through it, I was not playing through it with a critical eye to those things specifically. So I would have to look at it again in order to have more formed thoughts, I guess.
Yeah. I think what is important here is we're not here to like be the definitive word on whether XYZ is successful, so much as when we talk about things like sexiness, it is also important to ask like, okay, sexy for and to whom? And who gets to be sexy and who doesn't? Because like I said, there's a lot of characters in this game to appeal to a lot of different sensibilities, whether you're into, you know, hot girl with whip or a beefcake or sad broody man in cloak, like, you know, whatever your particular taste is, like there is some element of it. But, and the but needs to be in huge glowing letters, it always looks normative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking of, you know, those shirts that with just like too many words that are like, my husband is this thing. And if you come to my house, he will hit you with his truck. I'm imagining what you just said like that with the but in just like huge. Like, it's the biggest text on the shirt.
My girlfriend is a hot girl with a whip, but her body is extremely normative.
And maybe we should consider what that means for us and our interpretations and our expectations.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is something that can be easily lost, or that can be pushed to the side in favor of celebrating something, like in favor of celebrating things about the game. And I'm not saying we shouldn't celebrate things about the game, because there is a lot that's wonderful about it. But at the same time, as we talk about things like sexiness, we should be like, okay, but who gets to be sexy, right? Who does this game do anything to celebrate non-normative bodies in the way that it celebrates the extremely chiseled look?
And many varieties therein.
Yeah, like you could be a thin, wispy chiseled. You can be like a built chiseled. You can be somewhere in between.
You can be Sisyphus.
You could be Sisyphus. Sisyphus is built.
He's just pushing that boulder all the time.
He has such a good attitude.
He is good.
The gist of that is, It's not that we can't celebrate what we have, or that, you know, we have to be down on it so much as we should. Like, when we're talking about sexiness, it's worth asking, like, but whose body and how? Yeah.
And I think bringing that critical lens to every aspect of the game. I mean, this is not deviate particularly strongly from what we were saying earlier about ahistoricism. Is that a word?
Mm-hmm. Sounds right.
About the game being ahistorical, like approaching every aspect of the reinterpretation of the myth critically. Who is the story for? Who does the story rehabilitate? Who does the story expect you to find sexy? And who does the story expect you to find relatable or likable? All are important questions.
Yeah.
And also, which of those characters did the original myths seem to expect you to find likable? although that's really hard to say, because I am not an ancient Greek person, so I cannot possibly know what they found likable.
I'm pretty sure the ancient Greeks really did like Theseus, so I was really pleased that Theseus is a complete shithead.
He's the worst. I love that he's the worst.
Theseus is one of those characters who I remember like little extra bits of his story that are not part of the normal myth, and I hate him.
He's bad. He's a bad man. I did get him mixed up with Jason for a large amount of time. but they're both bad.
Jason completely in my reading. So I just remember Theseus and I hate him.
Well, Jason sucks. And justice for Medea, ride off in your chariot of dragons. You go, girl. That's what I have to say about Jason. Yeah, she did poison her kids, but like, you know, it's ancient Greece. Who didn't poison their kids? Anyway.
So the last thing I do want to mention, especially with regards to like who the game expects you to find sympathetic, is Hades, the man, the myth, the bad dad.
Truly.
And how this game, I find that pretty much anyone in the underworld, the game feels like it wants me to find them to an extent sympathetic.
Mm-hmm. Except the nameless shades.
Not in the underworld. I meant the House of Hades specifically.
Gotcha.
Not so much the rest of the levels. So anyone in the House of Hades, I think the game expects me to find somewhat sympathetic. Maybe including the shades that just like are hanging around having conversations.
I love their little facial expressions that pop up. I love them so much.
They're so cute.
They're so cute.
And that includes Hades, the man, the myth, the bad dad, which contrasts with my experience of Hades, which is intense and prolonged dislike.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I can what is it? Empathize, maybe, with him a little
bit.
That
sounds right.
In that, like, listen. Sometimes you got a really hard job and some shit goes down with your child's birth and it's very confusing and your family really is the worst and you have to make some hard decisions. And it's very confusing and difficult.
Yeah, but also.
So I can see how that would be a situation that would make you perhaps not the easiest to interact with while it was happening. However,
he's
consistently just a fucking jackass. Mm-hmm. In ways that are not just like, teehee, you're kind of a jackass. Like, he's not just snippy. He's like regularly between undermining and cruel to not mm-hmm. just Zagreus, but everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm not into it.
The internet seems to be into it, though. Oh,
sorry, wait. I realized I was not done with my sentence.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
But I made it seem like I was done, but I realized that I wasn't. I'm not into it, and it's jarring to me in playing the game that, especially in the end, it feels like the game wants me to feel more sympathetic to him.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because of a lack of interactions that I would expect to happen given the narrative patterns of the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And it's weird.
Yeah. There's no... So I think the thing that's missing from Hades as a character to me with regard to, like, comparatively to some of the other characters who may also do shitty things. I mean, everybody did shitty things. It was ancient Greece.
Can I lampshade real quick? If it's not clear to listeners, we're going to talk about Hades and some of his characterization in the end of the game. We're not going to talk about exact events, but we are going to talk about like our interpretations of him and how that makes us feel and perhaps how that made other people feel on the internet. So if you don't want to hear about that, it's probably worth closing out now and like playing through the game until you get to these points.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be the last thing we talk about. So it's pretty much from here to the end of the podcast, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think comparatively, like compared to the other characters, all of whom do shitty things, because that's the nature of both stories and ancient Greek myth in particular. Hades does not exhibit growth. He has an explanation. And those are two different things.
Yeah.
His actions being explained make me go, okay, I get why you did that at that time. I don't get why you continued to do it,
mm-hmm.
nor do I feel any sympathy for you now, because you're just a big old asshole. And I find it strange that the narrative seems to think that I should be on your side.
Yeah.
Or that I should be seeing some growth or remorse because I don't see it.
Yeah, I would definitely. I mean, I think that for me, it's like the game hints that there is potential for growth and remorse. Like, it seems that that is the way that things are supposed to move on from there on out. But you don't actually seem to see that actualized. And that's something that I find frustrating, that the game is like, and he will become a better father. But then there's no, but where is the evidence of him becoming a better father? Because he is just because there's an explanation for why he did what he did does not explain why he's like kind of borderline abusive to Zacharias. I mean, he is neglectful at the least, and he's cruel at his worst. Right. And otherwise, it's like Zacharias is, I mean, the narrative seems to want Zacharias and his father to make up, but the problem isn't the making up, right? Like, the problem is that this is a grown-ass god who acknowledges that things have been bad and then doesn't seem to move forward to actually do something meaningful, as opposed to just saying things will change.
Yeah, it's throughout the game, it's clear that Hades is a strict taskmaster. He's the big boss of the underworld. And a lot of the characters who you meet in the house are terrified of him, and are his employees. Yeah. And so it's this very deeply damaging work environment that also applies to his own child, who he employed for a while. And that's talked about less over time, but it's already been established. And it was impossible for me to forget that it had been established and that it was the environment in which these characters were existing. But the game seems to forget because it's not brought up. And, you know, I haven't finished out the epilogue, but I don't get the sense that it's being worked to. And that feels, in a game that so tidily and completely wraps up its character storylines and has them grow and has them evolve and find themselves in new emotional spaces, it feels like a hole in the narrative.
Yeah.
That this doesn't also happen to the character who has the same name as the game.
I think part of, like, I wouldn't ask for the game to put a neat and tidy bow on Hades, because I think that as a character, I think his characterization makes sense. And I'm not asking for him to, like, give Zacharias a puppy at the end or whatever.
But it's not remarked on.
Yeah. What I would like to see is like a clear attempt at growth and what that might look like for Hades. It doesn't mean he has to be successful. I don't see any move in that direction. Primarily what I see is less of an antagonistic relationship and more of a begrudging acknowledgement that they have to coexist.
Right. Yeah, I've gotten... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Zora.
Oh, yeah, no, and what... I don't see any sort of... Condemnation feels like a very strong word, but I think it is the word I want. Because I don't see any sort of explicit condemnation of his behavior. It's all this sort of tacit acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It frustrates me because, like, there's so much else in the game that is, like, accepting of, like, the game itself is kind of about struggling against impossible circumstances and then affecting change in places that have never changed.
Yeah.
The inclusion of gods like Persephone, for example, hints at, like, cycles and growth and the necessity of balance. But for the character of Hades, those things don't seem to apply in a way that frustrates me, both in a narrative sense and in a personal sense, because I hate to see a narrative in which it's like this happens over and over again in media where someone has a bad, usually father figure, sometimes mother figure, and they have to let that person back into their life because they've changed. And now we just have to accept that because the real problem all along was the character who did the rejection, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know that that is, I don't think that Hades casts the characters who reject Hades, the character.
No.
As having problems. But yeah, it's a trope. And I think also there's a trope of like, the way to be a happy family is to live with the toxic large man.
Yeah.
And I hate that. I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, I think it's, I have maxed out Hades and another important character, and I won't go into details, but I feel like there is this sort of tacit acknowledgement that Hades has been bad, and then there is not really any change. That's still, I feel like there is an acknowledgement, but it does not seem to move past that for me, which confuses me as to why the internet discourse seems to forgive him for everything, as if the game does that. Because I guess the game kind of does.
The game doesn't move in a different direction. Like, you know, Trent's, frequently we want to interpret the stories that we enjoy positively. We want them to tell the story we want to be told. So I absolutely understand the desire for that family to end positively, not like their end, but like to end the game, to be able to continue the game in a positive way, or to after the game in a positive way. But I think that maybe, I think that puts pressure on the narrative to have told a story that it did not. And I think that it's, or alternately, it gives credit, the narrative credit for telling a story that it did not. And I think it's important that we, as critics specifically, we look at what the game says explicitly, and what it does not say explicitly. And obviously there's subjective interpretation of what you get from the story. But it's important to try and like see how much of your perception of the game is your interpretation and how much is laid out explicitly by the game. And I found myself left cold by how much the game expected me to be generous to Hades. Or didn't expect me to be generous to Hades, but like how much I did have to be generous to Hades in order to like see him as at all sympathetic. And I'm not willing to be that generous. And so because the game didn't like push harder in any given direction, it feels like an oversight when other characters' narratives are so fleshed out.
Yeah. Yeah, it just felt as if there was an expectation that I was on board, and I was actually super not on board. I was standing on the shore going, huh? Like, I'm very confused about what you want me to feel right now. And I feel that I am feeling it wrong. And then when I was looking at other articles about it, and people were talking about Hades, the character, as like in terms of softness.
What?
I was scratching my head. Like, I know I haven't finished the game yet, but I've also like finished the game in terms of like a good chunk of it.
Yeah. And you could stop. I mean, you could stop where you've ended. Like a game, there's not a moment in the game where it feels like you can never walk away.
And it was just very strange. It was very strange to me to see Hades Red in that light, because I was like, I'm not getting that at all, to the point that I brought it to Zora and Nassim and was like, am I missing something? Like, because I'm super not on board with this.
Yeah, I am historically incredibly critical of parental figures in games, because that's the person I am. I have an incredibly good father, and a mother who I don't have a relationship with, and both of these things make me very, very critical of parent narratives in fiction, and narratives that try to make me feel sympathetic to parents who are willingly or not doing things that harm their children. Every parent's gonna fuck up your life a little bit. Right. It's really hard to be an adult in charge of a human being. But there are patterns of harm that become increasingly difficult to excuse. And mm-hmm. frequently, media expects me to excuse them.
Mm.
And this game is no different. And it's confusing.
Yeah. I, not to get too into my personal life, but like being asked to forgive a figure like Hades is like what I have been trying to avoid my entire life. Like, yeah. It's like what I'm in therapy for. So when I'm asked to do that by a video game that expects me to have that level of forgiveness for a character who has not put in the work to earn that forgiveness, mm-hmm. it makes me mad. Like, mm-hmm. that is how I feel about it. You're not
the only person. I've seen again on the internet, and this is on Twitter, but like personal reactions to Hades, to the tacit acceptance of Hades. I've seen people get really angry. I follow somebody who put down the game, mm-hmm. because it indexed into their personal trauma in a way mm-hmm. that wasn't like tenable. And I don't think games have a responsibility to, you know, expect every single human being's personal trauma.
Right.
But this
right.
does feel like a specific failing of this game, because it doesn't feel like it treated Hades' narrative with as much like critical intent.
It could have too, yes, right?
Yes, because it feels like such a gap. I'm like, it's right there.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's what makes it especially frustrating, is because so much care was put into so many other angles of this mm-hmm. game. And then it comes to this and I'm like, it's like I tried to give you a high five and you left me hanging. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I feel left out right now. The rest of this was done with a lot of care. And then it comes to this story and you're just expecting me to follow through on what you see as the natural course of events.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not there for me, which is disappointing, because I like as a consumer of media, that super fluid and useful term, I like stories that force me to get uncomfortable mm-hmm. and to challenge my own perspective, and it's like this is doing that, but it's not doing it in a way that appeals to me, I guess.
I don't know that Hades is forcing me to challenge my own perspective so much as other like people who interpret him as soft are having me question my own perspective.
Yeah. And I guess that's a
like I like games that make me think and make me question like where I'm coming from and how I interpret the events within them. I'm not such a fan of storylines where other people have me feel like other people's interpretation of them has me feeling like I'm insane.
Mm.
Or like I've missed something completely, or like I don't have like the critical reading ability that I thought I did. Mm-hmm. Which are all very different than insanity. I have this with, I'm sorry. You remember, it was our Fargo minute. This is going to be our Fargo minute.
I've finally seen the Fargo movie, by the way.
Oh, good. I like that one. I mean, it has problems, but like as a piece of fiction, it holds together much more strongly than Fargo, the TV show. Anyway, we can't do another Fargo minute because we're going to do a Knives Out minute.
Oh, I've seen that too. I saw that last week.
I hate Knives Out. Ryan really? Johnson's on my shit list.
Oh.
So this is meant to represent like me questioning my critical reading ability. Everybody on the internet loves Knives Out. Not everybody. Mm-hmm. A couple people don't. Because everyone thinks it's like an incredibly progressive take on the murder mystery.
It is? Wait, it is? That's what people say about this movie? They're not like, oh yay, references to Poirot, like that's what they go with.
Wildly progressive. And people pitched it to me because they were like, you're gonna love this. It's not Murder on the Orient Express, I guess.
Hooray.
and
bar over there.
I went into it with doubts, but with an open mind. I was like, maybe I'm gonna love this movie. Maybe this is my new favorite movie. And boy did I not. because it itself falls into the traps that it mocks its characters for falling into. Thinking specifically about, I don't remember any of the characters' names. The main
What's their role? Woman.
I love Knives Out. I can probably help.
The main character, not Daniel Craig.
The caregiver character?
Yes. What's her name?
Oh, shit. Of course. The one I can't remember. I keep wanting to say Lucy. It's not Lucy.
Definitely not Lucy. Anyway, hold on. I'm going to look it up.
It's not Grace either. What are these names that are coming to mind?
Ana de Armas.
Her real name is
Marta.
Marta.
Yeah, anyway, so Marta. Maybe I missed it in the movie. I saw it once and I don't really intend to see it again. But over the course of the movie itself, the narrative itself mocks this rich white family for constantly being so sure that it knows what country Marta's family is from. And they all say different words. They all say different places. They have no fucking clue. But they're all very convinced that they know. I left that movie theater having zero fucking clue where Marta was from. So the movie itself did not find it important enough to convey that information to me.
I think as a viewer, it does.
When?
But I don't remember where.
Right? Like, I left that movie feeling like I didn't know her heritage in a way that it was mocking the characters for not knowing, right? Like, and I mean, I'm a white person. I'm fine with the movie mocking not, like, that specific kind of lack of knowledge. I should be mocked for being so sure about a person's identity when it's brutally incorrect. But it felt very much like the movie was gaining accolades that it didn't necessarily deserve for its progressive representation.
That's one take of that movie.
It's a funny movie, but I didn't feel that it broke the barriers that it thought it did. Also, Daniel Craig's accent was like nails on a chalkboard for me. And Haiti, and this makes me feel like I'm losing it constantly, just like my response to Fargo makes me feel like I'm losing it, because so many people are so high on Fargo and Knives Out, and so many, and I'm just not. And I don't necessarily think that's because I'm being a hard ass. I think it's because the failings of Fargo and Knives Out are things that that personally frustrate me more, perhaps than frustrate other people. And similarly, Hades.
This could explain my reaction to Workshop, actually, in which everyone's like, wow, this piece was amazing. And I go, wow, we did not read the same piece. I'm going to shut up. Anyway, MFA rant. It's my last semester. It's fine. Hades.
But yeah, it's difficult to work through why your opinion, my opinion, is so massively different than many, many, many people I respect.
Yeah.
Like critics I respect. Friends and critics alike.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those issues are worth surfacing.
This is tangential, but not unrelated, is why I value... So, like, I wrote that piece in response to Rebind's piece about Untitled Goose Game, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I found that Untitled Goose Game piece at Rebind immensely valuable because it yanked the conversation away from the popular conversation at the time, which was haha fun goose game that is wildly popular, into a realm that forced us all to look at it critically, whether we wanted to or not. Mm-hmm. And I find that immensely valuable to have that loud dissenting opinion, whether I agree with it or not, to broaden the spectrum of conversations we're allowed to have.
Yeah.
So if I saw more, I wish I saw more pieces that were being like, hey, Hades, he fucking sucks and he sticks out like a sore thumb in comparison to everybody else. Why is he like this and why aren't we talking about it?
Yeah.
I would find that to be really valuable in this conversation.
Good news. That's us.
Yeah, you heard it here. Hades fucking sucks. And I would fight him in the street. I would die immediately.
Good news about video game. Hades.
You can indeed fight him.
And yet I don't take as much joy as I do from fighting Theseus.
I don't
Theseus is really insufferable.
Theseus fight is like, I think it's because Zagreus has a lot of fun fighting Theseus. Yeah.
That is true. Zagreus
is also, like, rumble, you little shithead. Let's go.
Also, I'm really bad at dodging, and that makes the Hades fight difficult.
Yes, of course.
I like to hit, and do nothing else. But that's my personal problem. Do we have anything else to say?
That I think we've gone through most of my feelings.
Yeah.
I had some mechanical beefs, but it's fine. I have another podcast where we're doing an entire episode on Hades, so
great.
If you want to hear about mechanical beefs, you can listen to Fate Geek Girls in like a month.
Are you going to talk about the capitalism question too? Because that's just a tangential thought that I think.
I don't.
Well, we've been going on for almost 2 hours, so you know.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. I don't have a strong opinion about Hades as a criticism of capitalism. I think that it is a game that makes jokes like Office Space makes jokes about capitalism. Okay. But I don't know that it is a leftist critique or any critique of capitalism.
I don't know that I would call it that either. That's definitely not my point.
Can I ask your permission to push on that, not push back on it, push on it a little bit in Fake Geek Girls?
Sure. Wait, no, you're not because asking.
Who are you asking?
Everyone.
Okay, yes.
Because I am curious about it with regard to Super Giant's work structure.
Oh, yeah, I would be interested to hear more about it because, yeah, Super Giant's work structure is interesting in the game space.
Yeah, and so I think maybe it is a less a intended feature of the game to be any kind of critique of capitalism, more so a reflection of the circumstances under which the game was made and what I imagine is an understanding of exploitative work practices.
Well, I look forward to listening to your take.
Everybody go listen to Fake Geek Girls.
It's a good podcast.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. I just don't have enough. And I'm so hesitant to call things critiques of capitalism without doing that work. Because people keep trying to call stuff critical of capitalism. It's not. I watched all of the chess show. Queen's Gambit. Got it. And briefly on Twitter, there was like a flurry of people being like, this show is critical of capitalism because she goes to the Soviet Union. It's not critical of capitalism.
That's not okay. That's a weird take, okay.
I mean, maybe it is. Maybe it is critical of capitalism. Maybe you could like write an interpretation of it, but I don't know that its critique is particularly intentional, and I don't know that it's particularly impactful. And so I hesitate to. You know, people like that show and they want the show they like to agree with their values. And I get it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the show does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And similarly, Hades, I would love to be like, yeah, this game fucking hates capitalism. But I think it just doesn't love office culture.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. That's all I had to say. I don't know why I made this sound like I had more. I don't.
Yeah. But I'm interested in hearing more interpretations. And Supergiant's so interesting to me as a studio.
You can, if you have a take on Hades as a critique on capitalism, consider dropping it into our inbox at editors@fakegeekgirls, goddammit. editors@sidequest.zone.
Yeah. I'm not saying it is either, but I did notice that there was at least some sort of commentary on work culture that I was curious about, but I haven't also done a dive to really think more deeply about it. And I don't think it's also the purpose of the game. Like, the game is not set up such that it would, like, any criticism it may or may not have is clearly not the purpose of the game.
Yeah, the game
unionize Hades.
That's what I'm saying. That is that is what I am saying.
Let's go unionize Hades.
In my review, I was like thinking about how to like write a unionized Hades like paragraph in there, but I was like, this is gonna take too long. This is much.
Well, we all know that I'm going there very soon, as soon as I'm struck by a lightning bolt for my blasphemy. And when I get down there, I will make every attempt to unionize Hades.
Excellent. Got this.
Seize the means of production.
What is the means of production?
Death, I guess.
Would that just be Thanatos?
Sisyphus already tried that and it didn't work.
Thanatos is not my preferred version of sexy, unfortunately. So somebody else is going to have to seize Thanatos.
My friend compared him to Miles Edgeworth and I haven't stopped laughing in months.
I am unfortunately not familiar with Ace Attorney. That's Ace Attorney, right?
Yeah. It is. I'm not either.
And of the like front on face for Thanatos when he's trying to smile and not doing a very good job of it.
He does a very bad job of it, I agree.
It's spectacular.
But his brood is exactly the type of brood I enjoy, so you know.
So we'll wait for Nassim to get down to Hades and then perfect. Nassim can seize Thanatos.
Excellent.
Together, we will unionize Hades.
Excellent.
I guess I'm gonna live forever.
Yeah, and Zora's gonna live forever. So, good job, Zora.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do any blasphemy.
I succeeded where Sisyphus failed. But not in the awful shit he did when he was alive part.
Do we have anything else to say about Hades? I mean, probably.
I do not.
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, okay. I have infinite things to say about everything, but I think we can wrap.
So that's going to do it for this episode. If you haven't had enough Hades, then you can read Zora's review, or you can pitch us about your take on Hades and why we're all being too mean to Hades, the character. Because I would like to hear it. And I don't mean that in the sense that I will yell at you if you pitch that to me. I genuinely would like to hear it.
Yeah, while you're at it, can you explain why Fargo is good? Knives Out, I get.
I can't help you with Fargo. I do really like Knives Please. Out, but
I'm begging.
I'll probably watch Fargo. I'll probably watch Fargo someday. And then I'll let you know.
To do Fargo fake geek girls.
You can, actually. This is how people get me to watch things.
Because
I have no fucking free time.
I probably won't. So I'm concerned that you would have a similar opinion to me about Fargo, which would not serve my purposes.
But then you can have the catharsis of Mary and I being like, what the fuck is this for two
it's
hours?
Win-win, really.
Yeah. You can find our website at sidequest.zone. Where we have lots of gaming criticism and news and fun coverage for you to look at. You can find us individually at various places online. You can find me on Twitter at Melissa Brinks. I have signed out of Twitter. I fucking hate Twitter. But sometimes I'll pop on and post a picture of a cat or something.
I am found at Jamsternazzy. I have not been on Twitter for a while because of Twitter. And I am about to go back into my final semester. So I will continue to not be on Twitter for another 4 months.
Right, you can find me, I guess, slightly more consistently on Twitter, at ZH Gilbert, which is a weird thing to say because I'm not a poster. I do not post. But I guess I post more.
I post. I just have to not look at it is the problem.
Yeah, you can get extensions that just like disable the whole situation.
Holy shit, that's ideal. I don't mind posting. What I mind is seeing. Because I am not good at filtering out bad opinions and they just fester within me.
Yeah, you can just turn off your whole timeline if you download the right extension.
Hmm. Oh, man. It's wise. Do we have anything else to plug? I don't have anything else to plug.
We have a Discord. Go hang out in the Discord. We rule. I've been playing through Tales of Berseria, a game I do not like, but is wild.
I like it.
Yeah, so I've been like kind of loosely live blogging Tales of Berseria. I intend to keep doing that with whatever game I'm playing at the time. I'm probably gonna skip Tales of Abyss, which is the next game I'm gonna play in its entirety, because I'm too far into it and I like it a lot. And it would feel weird to just be like disconnected posting 20 hours in. But after that, I might do Tales of Vesperia, which is a game I also expect to really, really like. So it would be sick to have a game that I enjoy straight from the beginning. Anyway, we do that. We have a Discord. Come hang out.
Any other plugs? Nissi?
Not that I can think of.
Okay. thank you to Alexander Nakarada for the use of the theme song Bass Thee. Thank you for that. It makes us sound professional and cool. And who doesn't want that? Again, find us online at sidequest.zone. Thank you for joining us. Do I usually say the...
You do.
Okay. Go take a nap. We clearly all need one.
Oh my god,
my cat is about to have a hairball.
Oh no, go get her.
Poor cat.
Maybe she won't. No, she's going to. I don't even know where she is. I just hear her.
Oh, sad kitty. They look like they're in so much pain when they have hairballs.
Yeah.
I've become incredibly proficient at darting across the apartment to move the animal who's about to upchuck onto hardwood.
Nice. There's nowhere in this godforsaken house that she that we have safe. Linoleum, but she'll book it off of it.
Oh yeah, no, I Dioji will be ready to throw up on my bed and I will scoop her up and put her on the ground and hold her there.
Wow.
Anyway, I don't remember what we were saying. Oh, British pronunciation.
Yeah, I learned
he was a bad guy.
Yeah. Was he one of the feeding people to people?
I don't remember. I like briefly looked up his mythology and went, nope. And then I closed the page that I was on, so I don't remember.
Give me a hot second. I've got my book here.
Missy, ready with now the source.
Sisyphus. Very wise, it says.
Thank you.
Oh, big yellow book. This book is like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's really hard to read.
I feel like you navigated it incredibly quickly.
I got to the index.
Oh.
It's so in the index, you don't have page numbers, you have section numbers.
Oh, God.
What? That is the most useless index I've ever heard. Why? How's that different from the paid table of contents? Like,
it's so confusing. Okay, I'm not going to look it up.
Anyway.
We'll accept that Sisyphus did something bad.
Like every other. Who in Greek mythology did not do something bad?
Clytemnestra. He had it coming.
Okay, that's acceptable. But Cassandra definitely did nothing bad.
Mm-hmm.
Cassandra didn't even do the murder.
Yeah, Cassandra truly.
I fucking hate truly. Apollo. You know who isn't in Hades? You know who's barely, not even fucking mentioned in Hades? Apollo. Apollo
yeah.
can.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Get out.
Okay, well, now you've done a blasphemy, so you're ending up in Hades.
Oh, God, via Apollo. That's the worst. I'm just gonna keep blaspheming. It's fine.
Yeah,
isn't Apollo the one who whisked Theseus away after when he left Ariadne on that island?
Like, probably.
That sounds right.
Apollo.
Yeah, that sounds right. I can't say for certain, but I would believe it.
Okay, wait. I got it. I went to Wikipedia. Sisyphus was the founder and first king of Phyra. Okay, that doesn't matter. King Sisyphus promoted navigation and commerce, but was avaricious and deceitful. He also killed guests to his palace and travelers, a violation of Xenia?
Yeah, that's a Greek. It's an ancient Greek.
I just wasn't sure. Yeah, I just wasn't sure how to pronounce it. Anyway, he took pleasure in these killings because they allowed him to maintain his iron-fisted rule.
Yikes.
Whoa.
Oh, right. And he seduced his brother's daughter.
Yikes.
In one of his plots to kill his brother, only for said daughter, Tyro, to slay the children she bore him when she discovered that Sisyphus was planning on using them to eventually dethrone her father. Da, 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 da.
That's ancient Greece for you.
Krampus.
But he's so nice.
Growth.
Every woman
that's
in
growth.
Greek mythology is justified.
Yeah.
Every single woman is justified.
Yeah.